The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I'm Betty. I'm a flight attendant for a major airline, and I bring you stories from the airplane, from the flight attendants and the pilots, and from traveling around the world. This episode is called It's Just Wrong. We have all kinds of stories that are, they're just wrong. We've got stories about the Ku Klux Klan, people acting crazy and getting thrown off the airplane, people peeing in the aisles, passengers having to keep their hands in the air, crew members almost having to go to jail on a layover, and at the end of the episode, my favorite story about a kid stealing an airplane. Okay. So, these stories, yes, they are all, it's just wrong. But you know what? Sometimes wrong is entertaining. And another thing that's wrong is how slow I am jumping on this technology bandwagon. I've known for a long time I should be on Twitter, and I just haven't gotten around to it. But I am now on Twitter because I don't have a regular schedule for posting podcasts. I feel bad that people have to look to see if there's a podcast. So now if you follow me on Twitter, which would be at www.twitter.com/skybetty, or if you go to my website, bettyinthesky.com, there is a link, follow me on Twitter, right under the title. This way, I will tweet when a podcast is coming out that day, so this way you won't have to look. Let's get going now with these stories that are just wrong. So, I like to ask people what their call signs were, and you were in the Navy?
Yes.
And do you know anybody that had an interesting call sign?
The best call sign I ever heard in 20 years of flying fighters in the Navy was Dash. So I'm briefing this hop and writing everybody's name on the board, and I come across this guy's call sign, tactical call sign, and it's Dash. And I thought to myself, you know, this doesn't sound like a very manly call sign. So after the brief, I got his fellow aviator off to the side, and I asked him, I go, hey, what's up with Dash? And he says, oh, Dash, he's a good guy. He's a real good guy. He's a gun enthusiast, though, and a few months ago, he was at home cleaning a pistol. There was a round in the chamber. It went off, and evidently it went through his foot, and that was about 4 months ago. And this is his first flight back after being med down. So I'm still a little confused, and I go, I don't get it. What's up with Dash? He goes, well, Dash, D-A-S-H. Dumbass shot himself.
All right, this is your bag.
This sticker on my bag was given to me by my boys. It says, old guys rule. If you read the fine print,
yeah. It
says, the older I get, the better I was. That's why pilots can tell stories better every year.
So a couple days ago, I was on a flight and we had a pilot jump seating, and works for another airline, a black man. And he was saying he's been flying a long time. And when he first started becoming, you know, a captain as a black man at the time, it was unusual. And he always got all kind of strange comments. But he said one time he was the one that got to have the comment. He said he was flying for Southern Airlines? I don't even remember that airline. But the agent had said to him, are you flying this particular flight tomorrow? And he's like, yeah. He goes, oh, well, you know, we've got a big group on that flight. And the pilot was like, okay. You know, like, so? He goes, we got a big group of people going to a Ku Klux Klan convention. And this black captain says, and I'm flying that flight? And he goes, well, yeah, if you're working that flight, you're flying that flight. So, you know, he's an employee, so he's working that flight. But he said he's never done it before, and he's never done it since. But, man, he jerked that plane around. It was a rough flight. He said, those Ku Klux Klan conventioneers didn't need a white sheet when they got out the plane because they were already white. They say you pay a heavy for your sins,
but you know I'm proud of all the places that I've been. One night, we were flying from probably Miami, and we were going to Kingston to lay over in Montego Bay. But we're late leaving Miami. There's thunderstorms everywhere. And in this iteration of my life, we had a procedure that before takeoff, we turned off galley power. And at 3,000 feet or something like that, we turned galley power back on. And that was the signal to the flight attendants that they were allowed to get up if they chose to. But they weren't allowed to get up when the galley power was off. So we had told them on this particular night, don't get up because it's going to be a bumpy ride. It's only a half an hour. Just sit down. But they're supposed to be serving a dinner, as usual, on in those days. And shortly after takeoff, but we were late. We were supposed to have gone around dinner time, and it's about 9 o'clock or something now. And so one of the flight attendants opens the door, says, I got a guy who's staging a demonstration in first class. And we go, well, what does that mean? She goes, he's marching up and down in first class going, we want drinks. We want drinks. And the captain just looks at me, and I said, oh, no. And he goes, yeah, go back and take care of that. So I go, all right. So up I go, out. Sure enough, this guy's marching up and down the aisle going, we want drinks. We want drinks. And and the airplane's bouncing all over the place. And I said, look. And it turns out there's four of them sitting in the back row of first class. There's a girl who's midway pregnant. There's him and then two other guys. And he's a skinny little, runty, long-haired guy. And so are his two buddies. And the girl's reasonable. And looks reasonable, at least. And they're not that old. And I said, look. I said, you gotta sit down. I said, it's dangerous to be up. You're going to get your drinks when it's safe to get up. And the girl goes, he'll be fine, And I said, okay, good, thanks. So I walk back up. I go, I took care of that. 2 minutes later, they're back up. Now he wants his food. He's demonstrating for food. And he's not just doing it in first class. He's going up and down coach and everything like that. And so he turns around and goes, and I go, all right, fine. So back again. I said, look, I said, this is serious. I said, you can't be doing this. We're going to go back to Miami. We're going to throw you off the airplane. We'll have the cops meet you. He goes, I don't care about that. He goes, I want my drink and I want my food and I've been on this airplane forever and, what's the problem? And I said, well, the problem is the weather's terrible. The ride's bad. It's dangerous. Everything will work out if you just be patient. So the girl's pulling him back down into a seat and he says, okay, all right. And she's going, he'll behave. So, right. So on we go. So we get one more bad report, but he's not staging a demonstration, but it's a bad report. And the girls are completely tired of dealing with this whole group. So the captain says, call ahead to Kingston. Have the cops meet the airplane. We're going to throw these people off the airplane in Kingston. And they're supposed to be going to Montego Bay, we had learned. So I get on the radio and I start trying to call Kingston. And we used to have to call in range with an ETA and the outbound fuel so the captain could pick the fuel load. And all we could get was Montego Bay. And we kept saying, we don't want Montego Bay, we want Kingston. So finally we said, I said, will you telephone up to Kingston and tell them we want police to throw these people off the airplane? And we're not sure if they're understanding it or not. So we don't really know what's going to happen in Kingston when we land. And when we land, we're like the only moving thing on the airport. It's late. There's just nothing going on. So there's no jetways or anything like that in the Kingston. They drive the truck up with the stairs, do that whole routine, this little gate agent who's opening the door, she's about 4'11", and she probably weighs 80 pounds, little black girl, young, and she says, I open the door, and she goes to me, did you request police assistance? And I said, well, yes, I did. So she signals down, and this huge, huge black cop comes up, Jamaican cop, and he comes up and goes, what's the problem? And so I gave him a quick rundown that these people were causing a lot of trouble. Captain wants him thrown off the airplane. So he goes, take me to him. So down the aisle, and then right at the first class divider, I turn around and I go, yeah, you know, here's the guy. And then I kind of step back a little bit. Now, nobody knows, nobody's figured out what's going on just yet, but the girl figures it out first. So the cop, he leans down, and he just starts talking to this guy. And as it turns out, he's kind of provoking him or prodding him a little bit until finally the guy gets mad and uses the N-word and things like that. That's and which is with this enormous guy. I mean, he was huge. So he reaches around. He flips the guy's seatbelt up, and he hooks his two fingers under his belt, grabs him by the base of the skull, and just picks him up straight up out of his seat like that. And he goes, you come with me now, man. You know? And this guy's walking down the aisle, and his toes are barely touching the floor. And it's hilarious. It's just really funny. And so I said, I think to myself, I got to see the end of this. And I got to go out and do the pre-flight anyway. So I race down the aisle, down the stairs, run around to the front of the jetway, or the front of the stairs, and I get to the bottom, and this guy is screaming, and he's red-faced, and he's mad, and he's yelling at the cop, and he's yelling at the girl, and he's yelling at the moon, and everything. And he looks at me, and he goes, good evening, we've met. And it's like, and I said, yeah. And he goes, kind of nods his head, and then he starts screaming again at everybody else. So once this girl has this all figured out, she comes up, and she's the foulest mouth person, so she's off next. Then the other two guys go off, and we get and just nobody's getting on. Nobody flies from Kingston to Montego Bay, so we the few people that are getting off get off, finish the pre-flight, button the airplane up, start the engines, off we go, get to Montego Bay, in calling in range to Montego Bay, and they're saying, make sure all the passengers stay on the airplane, we'll take care of this. And we're going, no, it's all taken care of, it's not you, it's Kingston that we're, everything here is cool. And they're going, no, make sure everybody stays on the airplane. We're going to have people meet the airplane. And we're going. And I'm going, no, wrong place. No, don't worry about it. Everything's fine. And so we pull up in Montego Bay, and there's this small army of people down there waiting for the airplane. And they roll out a red carpet at the base of the, they roll up the stairs on the pickup truck. They roll out a red carpet. Handful of people come up, knock on the door. I open the door. They take one look around the corner and they go, where's Def Leppard? And we go, really? I said, well, you'll find them in Kingston under police guard, I think. Stop your ways, oh, you're gonna die.
But you don't see no tears filling up my eyes. Okay, so this happened recently, right?
It did. What happened was, this was on a 767 aircraft, and the head flight attendant, her name is, she was sitting at the front jump seat, which is next to the boarding door.
Right.
And she had put her bag, we usually put our bags down near the floor, on the floor, near our jump seat. So she had left the area and gone to the back of the airplane, and when she came back, there was a man standing over her...
Her bag. This is in flight, right?
And this was in flight. And he was urinating.
She didn't get to finish that story because something important came up and we had to go to work. That could be a problem sometimes. But what she said was, she says to the man, what are you doing? You're urinating in my bag and all over the floor in front of first class. You know, what are you doing? And he said, I had to go to the bathroom and there was a line, so I just went. Ugh. That could be nominated for the Classy Passenger Award, huh? But the funny part of that story was she goes back to the galley and she was flying with a friend of hers and she's like, you believe that man? He just peed in my carry-on bag and all over the floor and just horrible. And her friend said to her, what'd you do to piss him off?
All I want to do is fly.
Is this thing on?
Yeah.
Okay. We were flying from Salt Lake City to San Antonio, and we had a little problem at the gate where I was out pre-flight in the aircraft and looked up at the horizontal stabilizer, and there was a big dent there, and it was right in line with the catering truck that was parked up to the back of the plane. So I asked the gentleman, did you happen to bump into the airplane when you raised the catering truck up to the door? And he said, oh, no, not at all. Well, of course, he had, and so we had to call maintenance and had a 3.5-hour delay. This caused a problem in the air because as we were over the middle of Texas, we had a passenger who decided that he no longer wanted to be on the airplane and decided to leave the airplane. But not just walk up to the door, but crawl over the seats and take swings at passengers on his way to the door. And it turned out we found out...
Seats?
Yes, crawling over the seats.
Yeah, that's usually a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem. It's a little 737, you know, and kind of tight quarters, and he's screaming at people. And turns out he was on some medication for some mental problems and had figured, oh, I'll just put him in my luggage because it's only a two-hour flight. But our little maintenance delay made it about a seven-hour difference now. And yes. Yeah, well, apparently he probably wasn't on his medication when they told him to not check his medication, maybe. So anyways, this is back in the pre-9/11 days when the first officer took his big flashlight and went back to solve the problem.
And that was you?
Yes, that was me. The nice lady captain who had been a captain for all of 9 months, and this was her first emergency situation, looked at me and said, well, are you going to take care of that? I said, well, I guess so. So I
liked it when you guys used to take care of
them. I know. I grabbed the zip ties and my big flashlight and walked back there, and two gentlemen presented themselves with their credentials as off-duty policemen and said, could we be of assistance? And I said, why, yes, you can. And I asked them, would you be willing to take the... first, I showed them the zip ties. I said, do you know what to do with these, which are restraining devices? And they said, yes, we do. And I said, would you be willing to do what you know how to do so I can go back and do what I know how to do? And they said, sure, no problem. So they helped subdue the passenger and restrain him along with three other passengers. But as he was screaming at the top of his lungs and scaring all the passengers, we decided to divert to Midland. I guess actually we went to Abilene, Texas. We were in between Midland and Abilene. And the air traffic controllers asked us where we wanted to go. And the captain, I'll never forget this, she said on the radio, whichever one has the nearest mental facilities near it. I can only imagine every other airplane on that frequency and the pilots looking at each other going, well, that sounds like an interesting flight going on there.
So we all heard over and over and over again about the... potential bomber on Christmas Day on the Northwest flight, and it's very scary. Very scary what he's tempted to do and what they continue to attempt to do. And I don't want to make light of any of this, but, you know, in the days after that incident, they kept coming out with all these security measures that were, I hate to say it, but sort of knee-jerk reactions and sort of unsustainable because... You know, to not be able to go to the bathroom for the last hour of a flight after it's an international flight, most likely you've been asleep, you know, that's when everybody goes to the bathroom. And then, you know, they're also saying, you know, the pillows and blankets have to be in the overhead bins and you can't have anything in your lap and the entertainment system has to be turned off. And so this male flight attendant, he was flying a flight into the United States just days after this happened with all of these restrictions going on. And he was telling all the passengers all the stuff they had to do with the PA. And he said he was just about ready to get on the PA and say, okay, for the last hour of the flight, I want you to sit in your seats with your hands in the air and keep your blinking to a minimum. I mean, I know it's ridiculous, but it also is getting ridiculous. I mean, we can't punish everyone for the one crackpot that might try to do that. I mean, I'm not in any way saying I have any of the answers, but I do think it's funny, you know, because he was feeling bad for him after telling all the stuff they couldn't do. He's like, okay, keep your hands in the air. I can see them. Keep your blinking to a minimum. You hear?
Been keeping track. Feel like I'm running.
running with a gorilla on my back. They want me on my knees.
First trip that I had, international trip out of New York, we had a trip to Milan.
That's nice.
Yeah, I mean, they're the same like our Hawaii layovers, it's 24 hours. But I didn't know my way around. Unfortunately, I had a good crew. And we were all going to go out to dinner. And there's like a little trolley train that you take. And you have to buy, there's like little magazine stands that you have to stop and get your little ticket to get on the trolley to go to your destination. Well, we got our little ticket to go to the destination, the canal area where all the restaurants and stuff were. So we get over there and we're walking along the canal. And nothing that looks very good. So we're walking and walking. We stop and we have a drink somewhere. And then we decide we're going to come back to this restaurant that's back by our hotel that everybody goes to every single trip, that they didn't want to go to this trip.
Yeah.
They wanted something different. So when we get back to where the little magazine stand is where we got to catch the trolley, it's closed. So we don't have a ticket to get back. We didn't think to buy a round trip ticket. So we all like, oh, well, we're not walking. So we all hop on the trolley. And we're talking to the captain. The both co-pilots are with us. And
so you all got on even though you didn't have a ticket?
We all got on with no ticket. I mean, because it's the honor system.
Yeah. So did you have to hop over something?
No. So we get on and we're like one stop away. We go like four stops and we're like maybe one stop away from getting off where the restaurant is. And the trolley police stop. And they all jump on. Well, as they're jumping on, they're coming in one end. All these people are running out the other end. And we didn't know what they were doing. We didn't know who these guys were. Well, they're coming to check your tickets. And we're like, oh, no, we're in trouble. So we start asking, like, we got a ticket. We're holding up our old tickets. We got a ticket. And they're like, no, those aren't good anymore. And so the captain has lost his old ticket. So everybody else has an old ticket except for the captain. So then they pull us off the train. Okay, now you guys are going to jail. We are taking you to jail.
They said they're taking you to jail.
Yes, yes. They wanted, the one guy, there were three cops. One of them wanted to let us go because he's like, no big deal. And all these people were hanging out the windows looking at us like, you dumb Americans.
You're supposed to run.
Well, had we known, we would have run out the front door with everybody else, but we didn't know what they were doing. So anyway, No, but they ended up finding us. They put us into couples. For some reason, they thought the guys were with, you know, this guy's with that girl. So they put us into couples.
And couples, oh.
Yeah, and they wanted to fine us like $75 a piece per couple. So like $150 a couple. And we had to give them the cash right then. Well, I didn't have that much cash with me.
Right.
Fortunately, my husband, who wasn't really my husband, I'll give it to you. So I gave him the money the next morning, but... Oh, yeah, we gave it to them right there on the, standing on the side of the train. And they wouldn't let us back on the train because we didn't have a ticket.
And then you had to walk.
Then we had to walk the rest of the way. But the thing about it is they would have put all of us in jail. I mean, it would have been like one flight attendant maybe that wasn't with us. Oh, yeah, high operations are all in jail. Could you come bail us out?
Yeah, the flight's late because the flight crew is in jail.
Yes.
All I want to do is fly.
I don't normally read portions of articles from a magazine, but in this month's Outside magazine, there's an article called The Ballad of Colton Harris Moore by Bob Friel, or Friel, that I thought was just amazing, and I think you'd like to hear a little bit of it. Especially anybody that's interested in flying or aviation, this kid's story is just amazing. It's in the Northwest San Juan Islands, best known for killer whales and Microsoft retirees, a teen fugitive has made a mockery of local authorities, allegedly stealing cars, taking planes for joyrides, that part's amazing to me, taking planes for joyrides and breaking into vacation homes. His ability to elude the police and survive in the woods has earned him folk hero status. But some wonder if the 18-year-old will make it up out of the hunt alive. Around 10 a.m., everything went to shit. 60-mile-an-hour wind gusts grabbed the little Cessna 182, shook it, twisted it, and threw it down toward the jagged peaks of the Cascade Range and then slammed it back up again. Pilots of small planes obsess about the weather. Ill winds, icing, poor visibility, all can bring a flight to a terminal, smoldering conclusion. However, when you're a 17-year-old kid with exactly 0 hours of flight training other than what you've gleaned online and from DVDs, and you're sitting in the pilot seat of a stolen airplane trying to make a quick getaway from a whole lot of law that's on your tail for busting out of prison home, and going on your second cop teasing crime spree, well, you've got other things on your mind besides the weather. It's believed that the kid had cased the small airport on the Orcas Island in the San Juans off the coast of Washington for at least a week, hiding in the trees behind a flimsy deer fence to watch takeoffs and landings, waiting patiently until a late model Cessna 182 Skylane, fuel-injected dependability, easy to fly, rugged as hell, touched down and rolled into the hangar farm. Sometime after sundown, he pried his way into the hangar, where he had all night to check out the plane, read the GPS and the autopilot manuals, and dig around to find the ignition key the owner had tucked away in a fishing tackle box. At sunrise, he raised the hangar's wide metal door, attached the crowbar, leaned his 6'5", 200-pound frame against the one-ton airplane, and slowly rolled it out. That's amazing. Between YouTube and flight simulators, any computer literate can find more than enough information to pilot an airplane. At least in theory, Microsoft Flight Simulator reproduces the dash of the 182 exactly. And so once the thief climbed into the pilot seat, his fingers found all the gauges and controls quickly. He adjusted the fuel mixture and the rudder trim, and the newer fuel-injected engines turn over easily. And with so many private planes on the Orcas, none of the neighbors took special notice of the early morning growls of his engines. He revved up and taxied south toward the still-sleeping town of East Sound, then spun the plane until its nose aimed straight down the runway, which ends abruptly in the cold, slate-gray waters of the Puget Sound. He went full throttle, popped the tow brakes. Instantly, the plane lurched forward. The Virgin pilot kept his cool, applying enough pressure on the right rudder pedal to counteract the propeller torque, and kept the Cessna on the skinny half-mile strip long enough to hit 60 miles an hour. He lifted off, and he mainlined an epic hit of euphoria. From what the pilot's mom, Pam Kohler, tells us, this was not only her son's first solo takeoff, but the very first time he'd ever been in a plane. The very first time he'd ever been in a plane. Here's a kid who's been told over and over by teachers, by the police, so-called friends, and nearly every adult he'd ever come in contact with that he would never do anything. And here he is. Suddenly, he's flying high, soloing, and a bright white plane with swooshing red stripes. So now, he's flying, and within 10 minutes, Camano Island, his home, came into view. There's a landing strip on Camano, but that wasn't an option. His face had already adorned wanted posters all over that island. So he continued south, southeast, leaving Puget Sound for the mainland and managing to avoid the heavy commercial air traffic around SeaTac. I mean, that's amazing too. The kid, how does he know what he's doing? South of Seattle, he banked east, putting the frosty white bulk of Mount Rainier in his right side window and headed across the Cascades. The mountains create a lot of weather, and on a good day, this means lively turbulence. But on November 12th, 2008, it meant wind gusts exploded against the little Cessna like aerial death charges, causing one massive buzzkill. The ride would have been extremely uncomfortable, says Eric Gurley, chief pilot for San Juan Airlines. So uncomfortable to him means that the equivalent of spinning inside a commercial clothes dryer. He just shakes his head, considering a kid with no training over the Cascades that morning, saying it's almost unbelievable that he made it. The police believe it, though. Once past the violent updrafts, the kid flew on until 11 a.m. when he attempted to land in a scrub field on the Yakima Indian Reservation, about 300 miles from where he took off. The Cessna came in hot and hit hard, bouncing back into the air before impacting again and nose-diving into a gully, the propeller blades tearing up the earth. The pilot trashed the plane, but he walked away, or ran away, the minimum test of a successful landing. When the police got to the scene, they found the cockpit spattered in puke. Other than the bits of his breakfast, though, the pilot left no trace and disappeared into the woods. Before he was suspected of stealing the airplane, the kid had been just Colton Harris Moore, high school dropout, juvenile delinquent, and petty thief who sometimes left bare footprints at crime scenes. After he climbed out of the Cessna and disappeared in the wilds of the Washington State, home of Sasquatch, D.B. Cooper, Twin Peaks, and Twilight, he became Colt, the latest in a long line of gutsy outlaws that capture the world's imagination. Today, Colt still remains at large and getting larger, a suspect in more than 100 crimes, mostly felonies. It's been 20 months since he busted out and began playing Grand Theft Auto, the reality version, and he's wanted in 5 Washington counties. There's a lot more to that article, a lot more detail. It is in January's Outside magazine. And I, of course, am not saying he was right in stealing an airplane or that people should go out and steal airplanes. But, you know, the attention span that kids don't seem to have these days, the fact that he was casing airports and stealing airplanes and attempting to fly airplanes when he had never even stepped foot in an airplane, of course he could have hurt people. Of course he could have killed himself. Of course it's all wrong. It's wrong, but you can't help but admire that kid's got guts. You know I'm proud of all the places that I'm in. Life is a game, just made for fun. Don't need nobody. Well, that's about it for this episode of Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I hope you'll join me again next time so we can travel this wrong world together. Thanks. Bye. All I wanna do is fly. All I wanna do is fly. All I wanna do is fly.
You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavor swirling together with cold brew topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles, and that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.